because there are a lot of listings out there that you can get a lot of deal flow coming your way. I know RJ over at 101 talks about how many deals they've looked at, and the number is staggering. I mean, it's well in the hundreds. So you do have to have a process, but processes should not take away that intentional spending of time.
Welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast with Joe Valley and Mark Doust. Since 2007, Quiet Light Brokerage has been helping thousands of online entrepreneurs realize their dream of buying and selling online businesses. And now, we're bringing all the knowledge our team has acquired straight to you. No matter your niche or industry, these lessons, tips, and strategies will help you build, grow, acquire, or sell your online businesses better. And now, here's Joe and Mark.
As you know, we recently put out a survey for our buyers. And you know, by the time this airs, we're already going to have closed down that survey, that poll, and we should have some really good conclusions. Nobody at Quiet Light, other than myself, knows the results of the polls yet. And I've been maniacally hitting refresh, seeing what people are saying, both the good and the bad and sometimes the ugly of what's being said. But I'll share one thing with you, Joe, right now that has come through that we've heard from a number of buyers, and that is wanting to know how to get the inside track on deals, basically feeling like there's this completely competitive disadvantage if they're a first-time buyer. And there's some truth to this, right? I mean, if I've got three buyers looking at one of my deals and I have one that we've done four deals with already, I'm probably going to prefer that buyer just because I already know them. They're a known quantity. We're going to be able to go through due diligence with them. We know what to expect. We know that they're going to not get cold feet at the 11th hour. And so it's a problem for new buyers. How do you break into this industry? How do you break into your first acquisition? How do you get the best deals when you're competing against some guys that maybe have done three or four deals with us already? So this episode is containing no guests. We don't have any guests. It's just Joe and me talking about how to get the inside track to deals. And Joe, I gave you an exercise at what, like 7 o'clock this morning, and texted you and told you to write some things down.
You did. But first, I want to say that to those listening that are first-time buyers, I've been at this for 7 years. Mark's been at it for more than a decade. And I can only think of one buyer that has bought three listings from us, maybe two actually, if I think Shaquille and 101. So there's only a handful of people like that that have bought more than three, and then maybe a few more that have bought more than two. So I think the competitive advantage is in preparation and instilling confidence. We've had new buyers that beat repeat buyers. So I don't want anyone listening to feel like they're second in line. There's no way to break in. And that's the purpose of this podcast, correct? So yes, you gave me a task this morning. Thank you. I did not sleep last night. And then I know I'm doing the podcast. And then you send me a text that says, come up with a list of five things buyers can do to get the inside track on our listings. Thank you for that.
You're welcome. And I came up with a list literally like 10 minutes ago, five things as well. And I had to think about it because five was just kind of an arbitrary number, right? If we wanted to get really minute, we could probably come up with 12. If you want to talk about the big points, it's probably three or four. But I think what you said is true. I hope people that are listening to this, especially first-time buyers that maybe have been looking a while and feel like they don't have inside access to deals, will end this episode knowing that there's more myth to that than reality. And you can beat out an established buyer by following some basic principles. And we'll go over some of those today. So I think the reason I sent you that text, Joe, I thought it'd be kind of fun to compare lists to see if you and I would agree on what these five things are. And honestly, I made my list a little bit with the knowledge of what I thought you would be putting on your list. So I purposely tried to avoid things and also get a little bit more creative.
I did the same. Oh my God, we're a match made in heaven.
Well, no, now we're not going to be hitting any of the key points because we're going to be avoiding the obvious. So if we miss the key points, we'll include them at the end here. But I don't know how you want to go about this. Do you want me to just go with my first and then you talk about your first?
Yeah.
All right. The first is really simple. It's super simple. Give really good feedback. Like, just give us some feedback on what you like and didn't like about a listing. You know, it's really easy. If I'm talking to a buyer and you look at one of my listings and you don't like it, it doesn't fit, that's totally fine. Let me know. But in addition, when you know, maybe give me a call and say, hey, you know, really appreciate you showing this. You don't have to say that, but you can say, took a look at it. It's not a good fit. You know, I was kind of looking for something more along these lines. The more conversations you have like that with someone like myself or Joe or anybody at Quiet Light Brokerage, the more that sticks out in our minds. Not only does it, A, give us really good feedback on our listing, which we can use to help get that listing sold, but it also helps establish a relationship between us. And when we're bringing a business to market, oftentimes we think about, well, who's a good fit? Who are some people that I know? And obviously we can go into our database and start to do some matching. But if there's somebody that we know and we know they're a good fit, yeah, they're going to get, we're going to think of them. They're going to be kind of top of mind. We actually had this recently with a discussion we had internally at Quiet Light. Often when somebody is taking on a new client and they want some feedback on maybe the valuation or their approach or any strategy, we'll have an internal discussion about it. We have just a generic email address and we all talk about it. And one of the brokers, Brian, was talking about a client that he was kind of worried about whether or not he'd be able to find a good match for it and wanted some feedback. And what immediately came to mind was one of our buyers, Matt. I said, you know, maybe you should talk to Matt and see what he thinks about it. And, you know, this will give him a chance to have an advanced look at the listing. And sure enough, Brian came back and said, I already talked to him. And you know why? You know why two of us thought of him? Because we talk to him on a regular basis. And he reaches out to us and we consider him a friend of the company. So that's my first item. Give good feedback. Don't just say not interested. You can say thank you. You don't have to say thank you. I had somebody say that recently. I said, thanks, not for us. All right, that's nice, but doesn't really help me that much. Tell me why. Explain to me why so that I can at least have that in my mind.
And that's the building of the relationship. Whenever I get feedback, I ask for it every time. All of us do, saying, if it's not for you, let us know. Let us know your thoughts on the listing. And the professional buyers, meaning they're just professional people, thoughtful people, send us that kind of email. My response to them is, understood, thank you. We will find the right one for you eventually. If I've written that 500 times, I've written it 1,000,000 times. I'm not sure if that math makes sense, but I write it all the time. And I mean it because I know that it is a arduous search trying to find the right listing. And these people are trying really hard to find it. They're reviewing the listings and it's a long, long process. So but that goes to my first list of things to do here. And these are in no particular sequence. But the first thing I wrote down, and I've said this at least 1,000 times over the last few years, review as many listings as possible in detail. And I wrote in detail in capital letters. In detail, that's the most important thing. The more listings that you look at, not just the teaser that's on our website or a competitor's website, you can't really learn anything from that other than, well, that seems interesting, but you don't really know what it is. You dive in, you look at it, and you learn what it is that you like about these listings and what you don't like about these listings. You learn what excites you about it and what scares you about it. And you begin to develop a sense for the right fit when it comes along. And that's really important because when that right fit does come along, you're going to want to be able to act quickly. And you've already looked at 300 listings. So you need to look at them in detail, digest the financials, look at the history of the business, look at all the products and the SKUs that are offered and everything that we prepare in our packages and really digest it and make your decision. And you're going to look at a lot of them. It's not an easy process. It's not a quick process. It takes a long time. One of the things that I love when I'm talking to, I'll say a new buyer, someone that I haven't spoken to before, and they tell me they've been looking for a year. To me, that's great because they've gone through a lot of this and they've worked really hard to find that right listing. When someone says they've been looking for a couple of weeks or a month, to me, I know that they've got a longer road ahead of them. And this is one of the things that I advise more often than anything else.
That actually fits in really well with the next point that I had on my list. And I think I'm going to point on there, just kind of piggyback on what you said, are two just kind of general philosophies when you're talking about this process. Obviously, what you're talking about, Joe, it takes a lot of time and everything else. I think to complement the first point I had and your point here, it would be two things. One, when you're looking for a business and you want to get that inside track, be intentional about what you're doing. Intentionality, right? So taking that time, like you said, to actually digest what you're looking at and reviewing. I can't tell you how many times I deal with buyers or I talk to buyers who summarily dismiss a listing based on something which is frankly not an accurate assessment. But because they've already made that conclusion, and despite the best efforts to be able to explain otherwise, that conclusion becomes gospel truth to them. And this is they're missing out on some really good opportunities because of that. Or I mean, maybe they're not missing out. Maybe they would say no otherwise, but they would say no for more appropriate reasons than what they're saying no to. So that would be the first thing, intentionality. The second thing is, to piggyback on what I was saying before, is this is a relationship-based business, right? At the end of the day, finding that really good business for sales are going to require some level of relationship, and you need to find that blend. I think as internet entrepreneurs, we love our processes. We love automation. We love efficiency. I mean, that's the hallmark of what makes internet businesses so great. But you have to find that blend between slowing down and taking the time, being intentional, and having a process, because there are a lot of listings out there that you can get a lot of deal flow coming your way. I know RJ over at 101 talks about how many deals they've looked at, and the number is staggering. I mean, it's well in the hundreds. So you do have to have a process, but processes should not take away that intentional spending of time. And that leads into the point.
Let me jump in. I just want to say something in terms of the relationship, Mark, and being intentional. We're talking about the five things to do. In between each of those five, there are a number of things that you should not do. And one of them is, in that relationship building, don't send an email that says, I think you've overpriced this business. It's only worth a 2x multiple. It's not for me. Because the 10-year-old in me wants to send an email back to them saying, thanks for your feedback. It's actually currently under LOI at this time at full price. And I've been in that situation a dozen times where I get a semi-rude email on a listing that it's been out for a week or two. And you know, some folks have looked at it. We've had some conference calls, and somebody sends me an email that says, essentially, Joe, you're a fool. You've overpriced this business. It's not worth nearly what you and your client are saying it's worth. And then that very same day, or just prior to that email, it's under contract at full price. The little boy in me wants to reply to that person and say, thanks for your feedback. It's actually under, you know, offer at full price. I say, thanks for your feedback. We'll find the right one for you eventually, because I'm not 10 anymore, but I want to. And so it is the relationship thing. Again, in between each of these five things to do, there's probably a half a dozen things not to do. And that's really one of them.
I admire your restraint. You know, an appropriate response there, because look, when it comes to valuations, I tend to get very philosophical on this sort of stuff, mainly because I've been around for 11 years and I've seen multiples way higher, and I've seen a market where people weren't willing to pay more than 2.5, 2.6x on anything at all. Rather than saying you overpriced this business, you can just simply say the price is too rich for me. It's not a good fit at the price that it's at. That's fair. Look, you got a price that makes sense for you. We get it. You know, don't tell us though that it's overpriced for the market. We listen to what every individual buyer is saying. And if all the individual buyers say not for me, then yeah, you're right. So I think that's a good point to have. All right. So my second point. All right. You're talking about going in detail. We're talking about making sure that you're talking to the broker and giving us some information about who you are, what you're looking for, why you liked it, why you didn't look like this. You might be hearing all of this and thinking, that sounds like a ton of work. Yes, it is. So that's my second point. Make it a job. If your goal, when we did the survey, by the way, I'll give you another insight. When we did a survey, I'll tell everyone listening who took the survey a little secret. We actually had two surveys. One was just open-ended questions. The other one was very quantifiable information. And those that filled out the survey with very quantifiable information, we asked, how many businesses have you bought? And the vast majority of our buyers have not bought their first business and are seeking their first acquisition within the first year. Okay, if your goal is to find a business within the next 12 months, make that your job. Okay, this is what you get up in the morning. This is what you think about when you go to bed at night. How are you going to go about finding that business? Deal flow is difficult. When we put out a listing, I put out a listing recently that was 8 figures, and we had almost 100 inquiries within a couple of days. Okay, that's a substantial amount of inquiries on a single listing. And that's not even close to what we get on something that's going to be in a more accessible price range. It's a competitive field. So you have to make this your job. You have to dedicate the time to it. Read up on it. Subscribe to the podcast if this is your first one listening to. Subscribe to the podcast because we're going to tell you how to do these deals better and hopefully give you some insights. But read up on these materials. Learn just like you would do with any other thing and apply yourself to this in a full-time way. You know, set up those processes to be able to filter through all of the noise and to be able to really take a look at the information in depth. So that's my second point. Make it a job.
And along those lines, my second point is prepare your financial approach. You can't get to the end point if you don't know what it is. If you're a cash buyer, it's a little bit easier to understand what you're capable of stroking a check for. But you also have to figure out, okay, if I'm buying an e-commerce business, I have to buy that inventory too, right? Okay, is there a seller note possibility? Maybe on much, much larger listings, but on lower listings, certainly not for the most part. But that goes back to, well, to one of our other points coming up. You need to prepare your financial approach. If you have a limited amount of cash and you're going to do an SBA loan, I love to hear from folks that are doing that they've been pre-qualified for an SBA loan up to X dollars. And then they tell me the name of the lender. If it's somebody I don't know, I'll reach out to them so we can build a relationship. If it's somebody I do know, it's great. Fantastic. I feel good about that because it's people in the network that we know and that we trust and that we know work hard to get deals done for buyers and sellers. If you're going to do got something under LOI now where somebody's going to be rolling over their 401k, I think it's called a ROBS. Mark's written an article on it, Quiet Light Brokerage and ROBS, and you'll find that article in Google. But that's another way to source funds to buy a business. But it also, you need to understand the timelines there and how long it takes to do that. Mark, can you do a ROB without having the asset chosen that you've purchased yet? Do you recall, yes or no?
I don't recall, no. It's been a few years since I wrote that article.
If you can, well, read the article, everyone. If you can, which I think you can, and you know you're going to buy a business, do it. Roll it over. You're going to incur some costs up front, but if you're committing to buying an online business and making it a job, like Mark says, then you'll be prepared to buy that business. Because going back to my point number one, you're going to look at as many listings as possible in great detail so that you're going to know the right listing when it comes along. And then you're going to want to be able to act fast, because other people are too. It's not like you're making a quick decision here because you've been doing this for 6 to 12 months and looked at 100 listings, and you're prepared to act fast, and you've got your financial ducks in a row. Because I can assure you, if it's a great listing, other buyers are looking at it and they've done this, they've prepared. It doesn't matter if it's all cash, it doesn't matter if you're rolling something over into a ROB, and it doesn't matter if you're doing an SBA loan. As long as you're prepared and instilling confidence in the broker and the seller of the business that you're capable of going from letter of intent all the way through to closing, that's the most important thing. Be prepared.
And to answer your question, no, you do not need to have the asset chosen before you convert to a ROBS. But take a look at the article, consult an expert on it, because it's definitely a trickier thing to do, not something to do on your own, I should say. You definitely want to have a consultant on that. Cool. All right. I'm going to diverge from some of the traditional advice with my third point that I'm putting out there. And it's not too crazy, and it's pretty simple. And that's get out on the conference circuit. More importantly, get out on the conference circuit where brokers are going to be and you can meet them in person. And this comes back to this basic principle that this is a relationship-based business. If I see you in person, if I have dinner with you, you're going to be far more memorable than somebody who sends me an email once every 2 weeks saying, hey, do you have anything in this sector with this this sort of EBITDA? No, I get a lot of those emails, and I don't have a face to go with that email. It's very impersonal. If I see you at a conference, we spend a little bit of time together, I get to know what you're doing, I get to know what your background is. That's way more memorable. And honestly, the conference circuit is a great place to just to meet all sorts of different connections that can help you. I know Stephen Spear, who we've talked about from an SBA lending standpoint, he's gone to a lot of these conferences. And think about this, you're now dealing with people that you've met in person, maybe an attorney, Sean Hussein, who shows up at a lot of the conferences, Stephen Spear, who might end up helping you get an SBA loan. And then any of us here at Quiet Light Brokerage, you've seen all of us, you've met all of us, we've all talked, we've all joked, we've all had drinks together and everything else. It just helps top of the mind and get to know everybody a little bit more closely. So that's just a very simple way to get some of that inside track.
Let me add to that. For those folks that are, you know, spending a full-time job on top of a full-time job and pinching pennies to be able to buy this business, if you cannot do what Mark is suggesting, which is a very, very wise suggestion, because there's nothing like human contact. Emails doesn't work as well. This podcast is a great example. Mark had written amazing content for 10 years, and then we started the podcast, and we've been at it for just over a year now, and people call us and they say, you know, I feel like I know you already. I just listened to 4 of your podcasts. We never got that kind of call when someone said, you know, I feel like I know you already. I just read 4 of your articles. Very different. So if you cannot go to the conferences and get that face-to-face contact, Scott Volker from The Amazing Seller gave me a great, great tip about a year ago. We were talking and he said he was trying to break through to an author. He read the guy's book. He loved it and wanted to have him, I forget if he wanted to have him on the podcast or just have a conversation with him. And straight up email wasn't working and he didn't have a friend to introduce him. So Scott turned the camera on himself, clicked record and said, hey, so-and-so, this is Scott from The Amazing Seller. I just want to tell you, I've read your book. I love it. I think it's fantastic. I'd love to chat with you for a few minutes because I've got some things that maybe we can help you with. And I've got a very large audience, yada, yada, yada. 30-second video inside of an email, hit send. He had a response within about 30 minutes. If you can't go to the conferences, that's a free option. If you're uncomfortable in front of the camera, that's okay. It puts a face to it. It's one of the things that we've started doing with our listings. As many of you know that are looking at our listings, we now, for the most part, on most of the listings, we do a 15 to 20 minute recorded interview with video and audio of the client, our client, the person that's selling the business. We don't do that to convey a lot of detailed information. We do that so that you can get a feel for who they are. If you feel like they're a good person, if you feel like they're likable, if you feel like you can trust them, feel. If you can't get to the conferences, that little video, I think, shoot an email to one of us or all of us with something like that. But I tell you what, don't do a template email, I mean, a template video. Because that's the thing not to do. I'm going to throw it in here between. Don't send a template email to every broker in the industry because we'll know it's a template. And generally, those are unpersonal, impersonal, and we don't pay much attention to them. Okay, why don't I go ahead and I'm going to jump to a different, it's my third one, I guess, right? No, my fourth one, third one. Create a checklist of your wants. Now, this isn't necessarily a thing that you can do to get the inside track to our listings because it's all of the other things that we're talking about. But for you, it will be conveyed to us that you are preparing, that you are really diligent about your approach. I was at e-commerce Fuel a few years ago, and someone that we sold a business to got up on stage and talked about his processes and his experience. And he put a checklist up on the screen, and it had a checklist of all of the things that he wanted to buy in a business, all of the features a business must have, whether it's, you know, relocatable, whether it's got virtual assistants, whether it stores its own inventory, whether it's a software as a service business, et cetera. And then on the right-hand side, he had a checklist of the business that he bought from QuietLight and all of the boxes down beside it. And not all of them were checked off. And he still bought the business. So if you've got this list, and Kevin Peterson was on the podcast, Mark, a while back, and he's got a portfolio of SaaS businesses. And this is what he does. He has a checklist of things that they know what they want. And then they always use that checklist on a listing that they're reviewing and see how many of the boxes are checking. They've developed a process to score it. They've made this a job, like you talked about, but doing that gets you away from the emotional approach and more to sticking with the logical approach. Because this, as a buyer, you're going to put your life savings on the line. It can get emotional. You can get frustrated. You can, you know that there's a deadline, a horizon to your job, to the bonus that you've taken, and it's going to run out, and you're going to feel pressure to buy a business. You want to avoid the emotional decision of buying a business and buy it with logic and reason, and a checklist, I think, is a great way to go.
Did you know, Joe, that I tried to start a podcast before we actually started this one?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I actually did like two episodes, and I had four recorded. And as anyone who's tried to start a podcast knows, getting started is often the most difficult thing, right? Because you get the first few done and you're kind of excited about it, and then you realize it's difficult to keep the momentum up. It's a lot easier when you have somebody else on the podcast, a co-host who records 70% of the episodes like you do, Joe. I did, and I think the second episode I aired on that, and you can still find this somewhere back in the archives, dusty old archives of quietlightbrokers.com, there was a blog post and a podcast on, do you have an acquisition checklist? And it was the exact same thing, right? How do you process these deals quickly? And how do you keep it objective? And it was, have a checklist that you're looking for and modify that checklist and understand that it needs to be this balance between being too broad and too narrow, and that you're not necessarily going to check off all the items in the box on the checklist, but are you hitting the major points enough to warrant that deep dive, that deep investigation that some of these make. So that's a really good tip as well. I see a theme developing in these as well, right? An overarching theme that you want to have this blend of having processes in place, but also somewhat of an analog approach, a non-digital approach to this as well. So Joe's talking about, you're talking about recording a video of yourself, just a personalized introduction so that we can see your face. That's very personal and human relationship and somewhat analog in that sense, or going to a conference and meeting us in person or calling and having a conversation, but also making sure that you have a process and you know what you're looking for as well. And I'm going to pirate, I think, my last point. I'm going to flip them around. And that is, when you see something that you like, act quickly. And I'm going to put a couple of sub points on this. One, speed. When you're in this space and you're trying to buy a business and you're talking to us and maybe you set up a call, and all of a sudden that business is snapped up, it goes under LOI with somebody else, you might think that person must have had an advance notice or they have some sort of an inside track. Speed is really the product of solid preparation. It's executed by people who know what they want and are putting in the time and have the processes in place to be able to evaluate these deals quickly and get back to us in a timely manner. I've dealt with buyers who are looking at an opportunity or they inquire on an opportunity. I do my follow-ups with everyone that inquires, and then I hear back, 2 weeks later, oh, I haven't had a chance to look at the listing yet. Okay, well, you know what? Very good chance you're not going to get this. It's just the nature of it is that there's a lot of people looking at it, and those that look at it within the first 24 hours and get back to us are typically going to have, quote unquote, the inside track. So the basic lesson here is pretty simple. Learn to act quickly. That doesn't mean that you have to make rash decisions. It just means that when you receive the information, if you like what you see, send out an email and get on the calendar right away for that conference call. The buyers who are first in line often do get some level of preference when it comes to that offer time. And there's definitely an advantage to doing that. So act quickly is my fifth point, and I'll do my fourth point last.
And in that regard, on Mark's point, he said, review it and get in line to be on a conference call with a buyer. I don't allow conference calls, nor do most of the brokers at QuietLight allow conference calls between a buyer and seller unless or until I have spoken to the buyer. So this goes back to reaching out and connecting with us and getting that out of the way. If we've had a conversation, we're not going to have to take an extra 15 minutes to schedule that before scheduling a call with the seller of the business. Okay, I actually have a few more points. I'm going to blend two into one. One is be likable, and the other is be likable and squeaky. All right, we're repeating things a little bit here, but that's very important. It's because we are trying to hone in on these because they're critical and they make a huge difference. So the be likable first one is actually be likable to the seller of the business. When you get to the point of being on a conference call with the seller of the business, your objective is to ask the same questions we asked, see if they answer them the same way, get to know them a little bit, get a feel for them beyond the video, beyond the client interview, determine whether or not you can trust them and move on with an offer of the business. That's the upper level objective of the call. The hidden thing, the most important thing, I think, is to make sure that when the call is over, that seller doesn't want that call to end, or that they hang up that call and think, God, man, I really like Mark. I hope he's the buyer of my business. Because if it's a great business, as Mark said, you got to act fast. There are going to be lots of people that are really prepared to buy a great business. And it's going to move what feels like fast. Fast may be 3 or 4 days, right? You get 24 hours, you review the package, you ask for a conference call, you have a conference call, and 24 hours later, you make an offer, or shortly thereafter, you make an offer. We don't let things go under contract 1 hour after they've been listed, simply because there's no way for you, the buyer, to fully review the package. There's no way for you to get on a conference call with the seller, all within 1 hour. It just doesn't happen. When someone presents an offer, this is one of those don'ts in between the lines. Don't make an offer without having gone through the process of a call with a seller within an hour, because we know you're just trying to tie the listing up under letter of intent and then make a decision. We want you to make a decision to buy the business, go under letter of intent, and go all the way through to closing. Okay, so be likable. Make sure as a buyer that your seller likes you on that conference call. And then the be likable and squeaky is be likable to the brokers. We're human, right? I didn't sleep very well last night. I had a bad day. You call me and you're hard on me. I'm going to remember that the next time you want to buy a business. I have a particular buyer that comes to mind right now where he did just that, what I said a few minutes ago. He said, I love it. I want to go ahead and put in an offer. I said, great. Well, let's have a, he and I had already spoken before. He'd given me his LinkedIn profiles. He was preparing. I said, great. Well, let's schedule a call with the seller first. When are you available? Total silence, 24, 36 hours, total silence. And then the listing goes under contract 3 or 4 days later, because there were multiple buyers, because it was a great listing. And he sends me an email on the next listing that launches and says, I really like this one, Joe. Can we get on a call with the seller of the business? I said, yes, we can. What happened last time? You're ready to make an offer, and then you disappeared on me. And he emailed me back and said, well, my wife had decided that it wasn't really the business for us. There were some things that she didn't like. To me, that's fine. That's okay. You got to do your homework first before you say, I want to go under contract. But it also tells me his intention was to tie it up under letter of intent and then make a decision to buy it. And that's a big no-no, because this is a very emotional process for both the buyer and the seller. So be likable to the broker, and respect and trust our time, respect our time, and build that positive relationship. Okay, so that's my fourth, I think, be likable and be likable and squeaky.
So, I'll just say, as far as being likable to the broker, we're not asking you to sit there and like give us all sorts of praise and compliments, unless you're talking to Jason, in which case that'll probably get you somewhere. But when it comes to it's just basic manners, right?
I'm laughing out loud, by the way. Jason doesn't listen to the podcast. We need to stop making fun of Jason, because he doesn't even listen to it.
All right, so who can we make fun of it? At Quiet Light.
Oh, let's make fun of you.
Well, I'm always game, but I say we pick on the new guy and the best-selling author, Walker.
You know what? Yes, Walker, right. And we're not making fun of him right now. I want to pay him a compliment. Before Walker came on as a broker, I had a listing and we had 3 conference calls with 3 separate buyers. And one of them stood out. He didn't end up buying the business, but he stood out to me and going, man, oh man, that guy is awesome. I hope I can find him a business. It turned out to be Walker. And so when you, like 2 months later, had a great listing and your seller said, look, I really don't want 1 million calls. Is there anybody that comes to mind that would be a great broker, great fit for this business, or great buyer, great fit for this business? Walker came to mind. And I introduced you, and guess who bought the business? Walker did, folks. And now he's, of course, an advisor broker at Quiet Light because he's fantastic. But it's that be likable, be memorable. Sorry,
but
go ahead.
Here we were. I was about to pick on him and just kind of tease him. But I'm gonna pile on with the compliments, because if you guys have listened to the podcast, you've heard me say in the past the story where I had a buyer, after his offer was accepted, tell my client, at the end of the, hey, we just got under offer, let's plan this due diligence, took the time just to say, thank you for agreeing to sell me your business. Well, that was Walker. And the impact that it had on that deal was so significant. I mean, it was again, such a simple little thing that you can do. And just, it wasn't disingenuous. You know, it was a genuine, hey, look, I get it. It's your asset. It's what you've built and you're agreeing to sell it to me. I really appreciate that. Take the time, be intentional. We've said that before, be intentional and think about all sides of the transaction here, right? Everybody hopefully benefits from this transaction. So we shouldn't be sitting there thinking, man, I'm giving you a lot of money. You should be grateful. you should also be thinking, I'm also getting a great opportunity by buying this business and being respectful of that, of the person selling the business. For a person selling the business, especially if it's their first time, this is probably the biggest revenue event they're going to have in their lives, at least to date. And so it's a very personal thing for a lot of people selling the business. Take that time, be respectful. I think that's that helps when you're in a competitive situation and you have multiple buyers. Like you said, Joe, we have people get off the phone and say, I really hope I get to sell my business to this person. Right now, everything else needs to line up. The offer has to be there, but you can definitely help your case with that. All right, last point I have I'll just go over it quickly because I think we've covered it pretty well. But tell us what you're doing. Like, what other businesses are you part of? What are you really good at? Are you really good at CRO? Are you really good at SEO? Are you really good at SaaS businesses? Are you really interested in getting into something different? Are you really interested in certain niches? Don't just send us a blank email. Again, we get these all the time. And if you're listening to this and thinking, wow, these guys just want us to cater everything that we're doing to their way. That's not the case. Look, work whatever way you want to work, but understand we get a lot of noise that comes in through our inboxes. The whole point of this podcast episode is, how do you stand out from the noise? How do you distinguish yourself from other buyers? Well, here's what other buyers are doing. They send us a template email telling us what they want. That's what everybody else is doing. We do look at those. We do categorize those. We have a spreadsheet that we share internally with that data. But it's a spreadsheet with 100 other names on it and growing every single day. If you want to stand out, do some things different. And one of those things is, when you do talk to us or have an opportunity to have a conversation with us, tell us what you're doing. And don't just talk to us about what you're doing in a monologue. Let's talk about your business a little bit. Let's get into it a little bit. Share some details with us. Not because we necessarily want to know, but look, we're entrepreneurs. We like to talk about this stuff anyways. It's always fun. I was talking to a guy the other day who is not a client, probably won't be a client of ours, but a fellow entrepreneur. And we spent probably 45 minutes talking about his business. It was a fascinating conversation. I gained some things from it. Hopefully he gained some insight from it. And you know what? That's now in my mind. And if he ever does come to the point of buying, or if he ever does come to the point of selling one of his businesses, that's something that's always going to stick out in my mind. So how do you cut yourself out? How do you stand above the rest of the noise? Again, have that conversation. And let's get into some of the things that you're doing, because it's a lot easier for you to be top of mind if I know that you're like a Shaquille, buying up just a gazillion businesses, right? Or if you're looking for that first-time acquisition. I can think of a buyer right now. I've met them for coffee in person here in the Twin Cities. Husband and wife team, I know that they've been looking for a long, long time, and I have a general sense for what they want. And I'll tell you what, because I had coffee with them, because they shared a couple of opportunities that they're looking at with me, I know what they're looking for pretty well, and hey, I'd love to find something for them. So they're, if you're listening to this, know that I'm still looking for something for you, and it's still on my mind. All right, so that's my fifth point. Let us know what you're doing. Tell us a little bit. Let's get into the details, not just the high-level details.
Yeah, back to the human part. When you have coffee with them, you talk to them. As an entrepreneur, as a broker in this industry, you get excited. Like, okay, I want to find them that business. I want to see them succeed. I want them to be another Quiet Light success story, and 5 years from now, come back to us and sell the business for five times the value, or hear that that they're traveling the world while running the business. And just changing their life completely because of something that occurred over a cup of coffee. So I think that's fantastic. All right, my last and final point may sound a bit crazy, but if you listen to our podcasts, and you've heard Ben Carpel on the podcast, Carpel, we always pronounce your name wrong, Ben, I'm sorry. You're awesome, though. We love you. If you've listened to Ben, and if you've listened to one that aired in early December of 18, RJ, you would have heard two pretty sophisticated, intelligent, likable, passionate buyers say the same thing. And that is, be willing to overpay for a great business, period. There are lots of great businesses that come out, and when they do, they get sold quickly. That's the frustrating part for some.
Hold on, Joe. Are you just saying this because you're a broker and you get paid on commission for the deals that you're doing?
No. They said it, not me. I'm quoting them. And it's true. I mean, look, it's true. We had a listing that I put up in August, right? We had 10 offers on it. It was squeaky clean. It had the four pillars. It had age, growth, transferability, documentation. Everything was perfect in it. It was just fantastic. I knew it when I looked at it. We priced it right to achieve the buyer's and the seller's goals. We didn't overprice it because everything was perfect. We priced it right still. And we had 10 offers. And several buyers were willing to overpay for it. One buyer got it because of all of the things we've talked about. He was really likable. He was going to be easy to work with in due diligence. He was going to be easy in transition and training. And he paid a little bit extra. And he was okay with that. He goes, this is a great asset. We've got an email from him since then about the crazy growth that they've had in the fourth quarter. And my thought is, oh, I should share this with seller. And then my thought is, no, that might put him in a little bit of a bad mood. But he achieved his goals. He wanted to get out at a certain time at a certain price. And we actually overachieved that. So if two people like RJ and Ben are saying it, I think there's some validity to it. Because if it's a great asset, if it's a great business, and others only weren't willing to pay a certain amount, it's great for you. It's not going to be great for everyone. That's the thing. Be willing to overpay for a great asset that's great for you. Right? If you're into hunting and fishing, and it's a hunting and fishing e-commerce business that's doing amazing things, it's something you're going to be a little bit more passionate about. And in my experience, when you've got some passion for something, it's going to help you overcome those hurdles and those tough times that will come to you as an entrepreneur. So if you pay a little bit more for it, I think you're going to get that return on investment quicker than if you buy a complete fixer-upper that's going to take some time.
Yeah. So I'm going to, based on that, go back to what you said earlier about people who email you and say, you're way overpriced. Like, there's just no way that this is priced right. You know, it's overpriced by a ton. Valuations are relative. And this is just the reality of it. In that survey that we put out, we had people give us feedback that said, you know, I love you guys, but I think that your listings recently are getting overpriced. And then I had other feedback come back that said, we love you guys, but the perception is that you kind of underprice your properties, right? So we have these two conflicting things where we have some people saying, hey, you're overpriced. Other people saying, no, you're underpriced. Look, when it comes down to it, the price of these assets varies based on the economy at the time, but also, probably more importantly, they're based on the individual ROI that you can get. And what you can get from a particular business is going to be different from what somebody else can get from a business based on your specific skill sets. And so if you find something that's a good match, it comes down to return on investment. What can you do with this business? If you can make that thing work, be willing to pay more than what the average person in the marketplace is willing to pay. You're still going to get a good deal. Don't let the competitive nature of thinking, am I going to overpay for this, you know, crush your ability to get a deal done, because somebody else will pay a little bit more. When we price a business, one of the big mistakes I think happens in our industry is that people price a business for the marketplace average. That's a mistake as a broker. And for those that are on the buying side here, I'm sorry about this next point, but it's just the case. We work for the seller. I'm not looking for the marketplace of buyers. I'm looking for a buyer within the marketplace, which means I want to aim towards the top end of that average range or the marketplace range so that I can find that buyer. Be that buyer at the top of the range for the business that matches for you. Otherwise, you're going to be competing against the full marketplace of buyers. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but again, the idea of finding that opportunity for you and standing out and making sure that when you find it, move on it.
Absolutely. I'll just wrap up my side of it with the fact that we're all entrepreneurs, as Mark said, and we love what we do. It's crazy, but a lot of what we're doing is simply helping people. We're giving of our time and we're getting something in return for it. We are making a living, but we love it. And it's exciting to work with great buyers, great sellers who are achieving their financial and personal goals. It's a lot of fun. And we want to help each and every one that comes through our email or over the phone or text or whatever it might be, help you achieve your goals, whether you're a buyer or a seller. And all of these things that we talked about, we've talked about it through direct experience. We've built and bought and sold our own online businesses. And now we get to see what thousands of people do, both on the buy and sell side. And so it does come from experience. It comes from the school of hard knocks more than anything else. We've learned a lot of things that people shouldn't do and a lot more things that people do right that stand out in these five things that we've each talked about or all these things.
All right. So, Joe, you know what I'm going to do right now?
I have no idea.
I'm going to end this podcast episode because I have an appointment with somebody who wants to buy a business and wants to spend some time talking on the phone with me. Good for this guy. He's doing the right thing. Guys, if you're listening to this and you have ideas for an episode like this where you have a question, again, the survey elicited some great feedback from everybody. If you took it, thank you, thank you, thank you. And I'm serious.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Quiet Light Podcast.
Don't drink beer,
for more resources from this episode, head over to quietlightbrokerage.com. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a rating and review in iTunes. This helps share the messages from the show with more business owners like you.
Answer a question that you're trying to tackle in your quest for your first acquisition or your 10th acquisition. Yeah, send us an email. Send me an email at mark@quietlightbrokerage.com or joe@quietlightbrokerage.com. We'll either find an expert to bring on the show to talk about it, or Joe and I will jump on a show like this, and we'll cover the topic as best we can.
Perfect. Go help that buyer.
All right. Sounds good.